thanks for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation with Guy Burton about Beirut. Now, Guy, French President Emmanuel Macron's visit to Beirut just 2 days after that horrific blast attracted a lot of attention. In fact, he was on the streets of Beirut even before Lebanon's Prime Minister was. Now, since then, there's been a petition demanding to, quote, place Lebanon under French mandate for the next 10 years. Guy, is anyone taking this petition seriously? Are the French taking this petition seriously?
I think that's a quite contentious thing to talk about. I mean, I don't think, you know, I mean, the idea that the French are going to come back as the mandate power is not something that I think, you know, is particularly welcome within the wider Lebanese society. I mean, certainly the point to be made is that Macron was one of the first ones on the scene. But I think, you know, the sort of what his presence there has done has to sort of flag up the point that the international community is watching to see what is going to happen within Lebanon. And the questions are now being asked as to, you know, what is Lebanon going to do next?
Guy, I mean, people are also, at least some observers, are also skeptical about this kind of savior attitude that the French might take, and some maybe French intellectuals might take with regard to Lebanon. I mean, aren't the French and some of the superpowers, in fact, who are playing politics in Lebanon also to blame?
Absolutely. I mean, the way that the French, what's happening with regards to sort of, you know, France is that, you know, they have sort of drawn attention to, you know, the issue of what's going on in Lebanon, and certainly, you know, this has also helped, you know, Macron, you know, sort of deflect from his own sort of domestic challenges and problems. I mean, here in Europe, we're facing difficulties with, you know, balancing, you know, the public health issues regarding COVID-19 with, you know, the economy sort of trying to provide, you know, sustainable jobs and that sort of thing. So this is useful for Macron in terms of sort of looking away from what's going on at home. That said, you know, within what's happening with the international community is going to be really important. You know, Lebanon has recently been, you know, sort of in talks with the IMF about getting a loan in order to help ease its financial crisis. But it's been proving very, very difficult because, you know, the Lebanese have not agreed to the proposed reforms that the IMF is suggesting that they need to undertake.
Well, guys, speaking about the international community watching, I mean, there's been some donor money that's been pledged, and that money is said to be contingent on reforms being implemented. Now, my question is that a good idea to kind of pledge donor money to rebuild Beirut after this horrific explosion to ensuring structural changes are implemented?
Yeah, so there is that is somewhat awkward in sort of, you know, demanding you know, reforms and change in order for, you know, aid, you know, for reconstruction of what is a tragic blast. That said, it's important to keep in mind that this, you know, the humanitarian assistance and the monies that are being pledged, you know, it's important to keep in mind that this was not a natural disaster, right? This was a man-made disaster. You know, it was building up to something like this. So it's important that the international community does not let, you know, sort of the Lebanese government off the hook on this. And you've seen that with regards to, you know, sort of Macron saying, you know, that he would like to see an independent inquiry. And that has created a bit of consternation within Lebanon, certainly amongst the political ruling class, you know, who fear that anything that's independent, anything that's international, would draw attention, you know, to them and put them on the spot.
Guy, you know, this is a bit more a philosophical question. You're saying this dynamic we see in Lebanon is being played out all across the Middle East. We see it, of course, in this region as well, in our country, also, you know, in many ways divided according to ethnic configurations that play out in political parties and such. I want to ask you, is Lebanon in any way kind of trapped? Is in fact, any shift of the compact, the troika that was allowed to rule after the civil war that ended in 1990, would shifting that actually destabilize Lebanon? And could anybody afford to have a destabilized Lebanon?
Yeah. So, I mean, the system that you have in Lebanon has pretty much been in place for the last 30 years, and it's become somewhat frozen. But, I mean, when we talk about, you know, this sectarian system as, you know, sort of becoming entrenched and leading to this kind of form of patronage and corruption and sort of disconnect between the elites and society. But it doesn't have to be that way, right? I mean, it could, you know, the system could work much more efficiently and much more effectively, you know, if the political parties were more sort of responsive to society. There is nothing that requires, that means that, you know, sectarianism has to lead to bad governance. I mean, here, for example, here in Belgium, we have, you know, a split between, you know, sort of Flemish speakers on one side and French speakers on the other, and yet they somehow managed to get the system to work together.
Well, on that note, then, going forward, what should we be mindful of as the international community watching this? You know, bearing in mind that perhaps the next government in Lebanon will likely be negotiated within the parliaments rather than formed through fresh elections. What should we be mindful of, Guy?
Yeah. So I think what's going to be important is, you know, as I sort of flagged up about the international community, you know, making sure that, you know, that whatever government emerges, you know, does, you know, follow through on, you know, dealing with a proper inquiry into what happens in the blast, but also, you know, providing support to, you know, to societal demands that, you know, an improvement in sort of the Lebanese way of life, you know, can be effected. But that also means, you know, sort of taking into account the sheer complexity that is Lebanon today. There is no single, you know, solution to what's going on in Lebanon. It's a political crisis, it's an economic crisis, it's a refugee crisis, and all of this stuff is brewing. I mean, the one thing you can say about the blast is that it's drawn a lot more international attention to something that we've been following, you know, as Middle East specialists for the last, you know, at least for the last 9, 10 months.
Right, Guy, could you help us just understand that apparently there are two contenders now, Nawaf Salam, an ex-jurist, and also Mohamed Basiri, formerly with the Lebanon Central Bank. These seem to be the two contenders in the race. Is that what you think? And could any of these men actually achieve something that the former government failed to do?
Well, I mean, not speaking specifically to those two individuals, I mean, they do sound somewhat like, you know, sort of technocrats in the sense of that they come from, you know, sort of economic specialist areas. I mean, this is one of the challenges because the previous government was, you know, supposedly a technocratic government rather than a political, you know, one based on political parties. But of course, you know, that technocratic government was one that was put forward by the political parties, by the political class as kind of a shadow for them. So in that sense, you know, there is going to be this big problem moving forward. You know, to what extent is government actually fully going to represent and reflect, you know, to the demands that are taking place within society? And I must say that there is a real anger, you know, in Lebanon from people I've spoken to after last week. You know, there was anger already, but I think, you know, the blast, you know, exposes, in a way, it's somewhat of a metaphor. It exposes, you know, the incompetence. It exposes, you know, sort of the poor governance. You know, the failure to sort of, you know, to look after, you know, the country's people.
Well, you know, okay, a final, very quick response from you. How democratic is Lebanon? Is that democratic culture helping, you know, produce alternative visions of that country?
Well, so, yeah, so there is, I mean, compared to many of the other countries in the region, you know, Lebanon does have elections. You know, it does, and periodically, you know, that this does. But the problem is that there is a, you know, the system doesn't really allow for, you know, considerable variation. I mean, you have seen some change take place over the last 30 years, but it's a very sort of incremental rather than sort of, you know, it's an incremental change rather than a massive sort of revolutionary change. And what you're seeing is kind of a, you know, a clashing together of, you know, a typical way of working that has been the sort of the way that the political classes and the parties have done in the past with what people on the ground are demanding. And the difficulty, as I sort of flagged up, is trying to sort of create a coherent, you know, new organization and set of demands that can be reflected, right, you know, by the protest movement. But certainly you are seeing some change happening on the ground. Whether it can sort of feed through into the political system is what we're going to be having to watch for.
Okay, well, definitely going to be keeping a very close eye on the situation in Lebanon. Guy, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight and helping us understand the complex situation there. Thanks for your time. That's all we have on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.